Club. Driving. No purchase necessary.
You're listening to Radio Free. Radio Free Urbanism.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Free Urbanism, a podcast about urbanism and stuff. My name is Henry Wallace. Just kidding. That's a reference to a show. If you got it, please mention in the comments that you got the reference. My name is actually Alex Williams, and today I'm joined by the Yuji Baguji, Nick Laporte. Welcome.
Hello back. And welcome back, everybody. I'm glad my name hasn't changed and there's no kind of hidden reference in here.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe next time I'll think of one. And today you might be wondering, where is Ethan? Honestly, we don't know. We don't know where he went. He just decided not to show up today, but we miss him dearly and hope that the posters we put around the neighborhood will send him back to us. But in his seat, kindly joining us is Arden English. Welcome onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we are super duper level 12. Like, we're like level 12 stoked that you're here. Recently, we found some of your work, and it's like actually really high quality. So maybe before we get into everything else, can we hear a little bit about how you got into urbanism and what prompted you to start your channel? As well as your channel name. Maybe tell us that too.
Yeah, let's start there. So, hi, my name is Arden English. I run the YouTube channel, The Greater Discussions, which is focused around urban planning and transportation subjects in the context of the Lower Mainland. So when it comes to how I really got into this stuff, because I'm pretty new to the space, honestly, its current stage was just me finding out in my senior year that, urban planning is a career, and it's something that linked very heavily to stuff I've always been interested in the past. Like, I was always one of those train geeks as a kid. You know, when you're a four-year-old and you get to pick what you get obsessed with, I picked the train because I grew up in White Rock, and I always had the train, like the Amtrak, going by twice a day, every day, without fail. And that got me stoked. Over the years, that kind of evolved. Turned into me liking transit, turned into me researching the history of Metro Vancouver and finding out like our old streetcar systems. And then I got obsessed with that. And then I just found myself spending hours of my computer time on Google Maps, not games, just looking at street view, looking at old rail trails and stuff like that all over the country pretty much. And well, then I found out, hey, there's this thing called urban planning. You might be into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was. That's kind
that's of super cool. Yeah, the pipeline from rail fan to urban planning and design is real. Are you're in university right now, right? Do you mind telling us quickly what you're studying?
Sure, yeah. So I'm just finished my first year at SFU. The official name of the major is Resource and Environmental Management Planning stream. The simple way of that is it's an accredited undergraduate planning program. So it's more of an environmental focus, but that's just what SFU does. It still gets you through with the intention of kind of pumping out more planners without having to go through like grad school, which is what most master's planners do now. The idea of getting more planners out there, and it's just awfully convenient for someone like me to ideally get it over and done with in 4 years, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that is super cool. That's super cool. I'm sure we'll have more questions for you about that later on.
I have
Nick's
one question.
Got something burning.
So you said you were really interested in maps and Google and stuff like that. And I've been that person for a long time. I love it. Are you a GeoGuessr? Do you like playing GeoGuessr?
I am only good at GeoGuessr when it is Metro Vancouver. As soon as you leave the confines, I'm like, that is a tree.
Yeah.
I don't know where the tree is. It is a tree.
So, probably Earth.
It is so much fun. I love that game. If you don't know what it is, it's basically Google Street View, and it just pops you somewhere. You have to guess where you are on the map of the world. And you can like have different confines in the game. You can play with other people. Oh, I love it. It's so much fun.
That's super cool.
A fun version of GeoGuessr that I would be really good at is you take the street view, but you don't specify the year. Like if it was Metro Vancouver, but you didn't specify the year, I'd be really good at picking out what year of Metro Vancouver is being shown to me right here.
That would be really cool and interesting, actually. And we are going to have more questions for you a little bit later on in the show. And if for people watching live, if you're one of our Patreon supporters, you can watch this show live every Wednesday evening before anybody else gets to. And when we have a guest on like this, you can also maybe slip in a few questions for the guest that we might ask later on in the show. But with that, we'll go to Nick for his update.
This past weekend, the Grand Prix, the Formula One Grand Prix, happened in Monaco. And Charles Leclerc, the F1 driver for Ferrari, the recent winner of that Monaco Grand Prix, which is his home Grand Prix. It was huge. Just saying, it was a good time to see the man finally win. I had to shed a tear a bit. But he's based. Did you guys know this? The man is based. In fact, what happened was he was spotted after the race in Monaco. I'm sharing this on my screen right now, riding a bike. And not just a bike, an electric bike. The man was riding home on a bicycle after winning the F1 Grand Prix. And that's it's evidence that someone could drive a car professionally and be this based. It's fantastic. And you see it too with Lewis Hamilton. He's a driver for Mercedes, one of the most famous F1 drivers of all time. Maybe the GOAT. Maybe. He's often seen with a push scooter scooting around the paddock along the pit spot, the place where they park the cars.
You're the racing guy, Nick. I don't know.
Oh, I just had a brain fart. I'm sorry. But yeah, this made me excited. I was already excited that he won, but then I saw him on a bike. I'm like, this guy, I can't love him anymore. It's amazing.
That is actually awesome. And I do think it being an e-scooter is helpful as well. Like, that's good for
e-bike,
for that. Or an e-bike. Yeah, that's good for that that visibility. And I think it highlights too that, like, just let cars be a tool and let them be fun. Don't let them be the thing that you're stuck in traffic in, you know.
Absolutely.
I think that's the I think that's a big takeaway.
And another point about that, and talking about the amount of fuel and stuff that they use, I learned this recently that in Formula One, like a lot of motorsports, the actual fuel that gets used during the weekend accounts for like a fraction of a percent of the actual greenhouse emissions that is involved with just an event. Not even talking about it being, you know, a motorsports event. Just getting people somewhere just costs so much in emissions. Yeah. We need to figure out how to do that more efficiently.
Yeah.
Because in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah. We need to, it's about the car dependency. This is like a conversation that happens like every week on Fuck Cars on Reddit. And someone's like, what do you guys think about motorsports? And someone's like, I hate them. And they just go off about how they're terrible and they're promoting car culture, which they are in a certain sense. Absolutely. But the discussion has to be around not having to drive everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's right. See, you can have someone like this, an F1 driver gets paid millions of dollars to drive, taking an e-bike to his job,
yeah,
where he drives, which is
cool. That is super cool. I like that. And with that, we're going to hop into our stories here. So I've got kind of a cool story. This is something I found. It's from almost a couple months ago. But apparently the University of Waterloo has a Future Cities Institute now, which should be kind of interesting. So the FCI director, Leah Miniker, told Global News that the school will, quote, focus on how to solve the most important challenges and problems facing our cities so that future cities are both healthy and prosperous. And when I say healthy, I mean for both people and the planet. And a few of the things she highlighted were housing affordability, climate change, aging infrastructure, and the aging population. So I thought that was super cool that this conversation about building better cities, it's becoming its own thing of importance rather than just being like a course in, you know, your urban studies, you know, series of degree or whatever. This is kind of becoming its own, like, hey, actually we can talk a lot about this and there's a lot to learn about our cities from a climate change perspective, from an affordability perspective, from aging infrastructure, aging people perspectives. So I thought that was something really, really cool to see.
Yeah, that's great. And it made me think about a book I read recently. I just finished Chuck Marone and I can't remember, is it Dan, his co-writer of their most recent book, The Strong Town Series. the housing crisis. And he talked about that aging in place and figuring out how we can make it easier for somebody to do that, you know, because people, they buy a house when they're, you know, early on in their life or middle aged. They have this massive house, they've got kids, it's full. And then as they get older, they become empty nesters and they have this giant property that gets harder and harder to take care of. And he did have some solutions for dealing with that, which was just basically, you know, adding an apartment within the house and moving into that. But we really need to think about how somebody can age in place. You could live somewhere and just stay there your entire life if you wanted to, because you put down roots in your community, ideally, and leaving that is really difficult. And I think as we see this generation get older, the baby boomers, especially in North America, it's a huge generation. They're aging out of their communities now. And we're starting to see that happen in many places. So, yeah, this is something we need to think about long term.
Yeah.
And again, didn't we talk about building for young people too on this podcast when who was on? Was it Alex from Untitled Planning?
I think
we talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big thing. Maybe Arden, maybe if you can give us some perspective. You're from White Rock is the city you're from, right? Yep. Can you give us some perspective from there and with that aging population, what you think maybe your city could do or maybe what it is doing?
That is a fantastic question. Yeah, White Rock is a very particular situation, but it isn't unique per se, you know? It has, in the context of Metro Vancouver, the highest percentage of senior residents of any of the municipalities, even the tiny ones. And we are one of the tiny ones. Despite our size, we still have roughly 20,000 people living in city proper, taking into account the whole Semiahmoo Peninsula, which accounts for South Surrey surrounding White Rock. That is, give or take, about 90,000 people, which is huge. That's like the population of Bellingham, just right there in this tiny little corner of Metro Van. And the way we are doing that is recently we've been building a lot of high rises. You notice uptown, there's just what we don't call our downtown. We call it uptown because we're cool. So you go to uptown White Rock and you notice there's quite a few towers popping up that if you'd been here, say, 10, 15 years ago, almost none of them were there. So that's one way we're increasing supply, but we have a really bad issue of, like everywhere, the prices are just way too high. And White Rock is a waterfront town, just like Vancouver. And so that means that you have that natural beauty factor to bring everything into, yeah, here we go. This is, if you're looking on YouTube, we got a good idea of just kind of the small scale of White Rock here, and then Surrey flanking it at every corner. But we have the issue of, yeah, natural beauty really raises the prices. And so now you have trying to increase supply, but we aren't increasing enough supply. It's just a really bad feedback loop that we're in right now. And, you know, if you are someone like I'm 18, someone around my age, who might want to stay living in the area, it's tough because you look at the prices in some of these real estate books and you're like, that's not feasible, even for the condos and even for, well, it's not like we really even have much like low income housing either. And there's been a bit of a homelessness issue popping up shockingly fast as well, which is a complicated issue that I won't really get into. I made one of my videos is on the White Rock high-rise dilemma in itself. So I'd say if you want to learn more about the city proper and its surrounding area, I'm going to plug that right now.
Shameless plug. Let's go.
On YouTube. But yeah, White Rock wound up on the list that the provincial government put out, what was it, a couple weeks ago now, for the housing targets, where in the summer it's going to start working on, you know, how it can actually start meeting housing targets, which is a really big ask for a city as small as White Rock. But just like any of the other cities in our area, it's almost entirely single family homes, especially the west side of White Rock. You notice an issue where the east side of White Rock is where all the density has been. And just like West Van in Vancouver, it's all like estate properties and big. It's basically all its own Shaughnessy in a sense. No one dares touch the Ocean Park, West White Rock, side. So, you know, it's about adding density in the small places, but also increasing the presence of an uptown core. And we just got to hope that council keeps moving forward with the high-rise proposals, because they actually have been.
Yeah.
A story came out recently. I have it on hand about council moving forward with two other high-rise proposals within the boundaries. So it's interesting to follow along with, but it's going to take a very long time to even get anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how a place like that deals with these problems, because they're trying to keep young people. They're trying to, you know, help this aging population. There's really like this interesting squeeze at either end of that age spectrum, where lots of our infrastructure isn't good or helpful or supportive of the elderly, right? But then a lot of our amenities are not good or helpful or supportive of young people, right? Making us not want to stay there, whether it's because of pricing or just interest in these places. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes forward. Nick, you look like you have a thought.
Yeah, I'm just going back to this whole thing is building for people and for generations of people across the spectrum. The age spectrum is we need more dense housing in general, but also we need dense housing that has options within it. Because what's really hard to find, this is what me and my wife are finding right now, is trying to find a decent, just a 3-bedroom condo is really not that common. So that's something that could be an answer, right? Is to say you build a building, it's got many different styles of units, but also at least some portion of it being units that have 3 to 4 bedrooms where a family could easily live within it. And then say, you know, you want to downsize. You could live within the same building and move into a smaller unit later on in life. You don't have to change your lifestyle at all, which would be fantastic.
And yeah. An interesting case we do have in White Rock is one of our high rises, one of the tallest ones, is actually a retirement community. So it's give or take about a 20-story tower, but it is reserved for senior residents. So I guess downsizing in a sense there, it's still quite pricey, go figure, but I think it's an interesting prospect to think of, like instead of having, you know, a high rise that has, you know, regular condos and then with like that mandatory affordable housing shelf and then, you know, businesses per se at the bottom, maybe just having a whole tower dedicated to low income housing, for example, or another tower that could be the condos or something like that. Interesting to me.
Yeah. There's a lot of different thoughts and ideas of how we can get it. And I know different municipalities, different provinces, and the federal government all have different incentive programs for trying to get people to build a greater variety of housing, especially right now as we're in the housing crisis. I do want to move us on to Nick's story here, but I one of Jen's comments in the live chat I thought was really good. She says, optimally, the elderly can downsize and the younger can upsize without having to move super far away. We need diverse communities in our cities so that people can create that familiarity with the things around us. I do like the idea of being able to age in place, whether I'm aging from my 20s to my 30s or my 60s to my 80s. I think that's a big deal. But with that, I'm going to send it off to our friend Nick here for his story.
This is coming from Tokyo. So Tokyo is to get a New York City style High Line. So one stop from Metro Tokyo's tourist walking Shibuya Scramble Crossing. I'm sure you've seen it. It's crazy busy. One of the busiest intersections in the world, in the most populous city in the world, is an urban village. So this is still in central Tokyo. It's called Daikanyama, where Log Road is the world's newest High Line. Log Road is a collection of wooden cottages built top of the old Tokyo Line tracks, where trees and plants sprout next to benches. And after the madness of Shibuya, walking through the tenements and green spaces of Log Road is an unfamiliar Tokyo experience. This is from The Guardian. So this is a new thing that has been built. And if you're not familiar with the skyline in New York City, it's essentially an old elevated rail line that has now been turned into a linear park. And I'm just going to share some video I have here. I don't even know where I put it. It's there. Anyway, it'll pop up when it pops up. But essentially, it's a linear park that they've converted an entire line. It spreads several blocks. I don't know how long it is in New York City. It's massive. But essentially, it's a park. There's green space. There's places to sit. There's even shops that are on this linear park. So they've done this also in Tokyo, which is fantastic. This one isn't elevated, but they've actually turned into places for businesses. I think there's a brewery here. There's restaurants. It looks lovely. And this is an example where we can turn places that used to be industrial places or old rights of way and turn them into public spaces for people. And that's a really great use of space. And I think we've done it in a lot of cities, but it's just good to see it happening again and again.
Yeah, it's a real creative conversion, right? Like taking something that you maybe no longer have a use for, right? And making that conversion. You can get so creative with it. And it tells an interesting story, I think, too, when you walk through one of these places. I think if it's somebody's first time walking through here, it's helpful to have somebody who is maybe a little bit more familiar, like, why is this here? What is this? What is, you know, why is this like that? You know, and then having somebody who's more familiar to say like, oh, well, actually, it's a really interesting history. Do you guys have examples of other things that you've maybe seen that kind of do that creative thinking and maybe like a creative change that you've seen?
I'm just thinking of local ones that are happening. So there's an old industrial building not far from where I'm living right now. It's going to be completely demolished and turned into an entire park, a relatively sizable park, which is really nice. Would I like to see some more housing in that area? Sure, there's already a park next door, but it'll be really nice to have a bigger park there. I'm not going to complain about that.
One example I can think of in Vancouver is the Arbutus Greenway, which very similarly is formerly abandoned industrial rail corridor that went snaked up along the west side of Vancouver and connected just south, right by the Burrard Street Bridge. There was the old Molson Brewery, which when it closed was all it was used for. But nowadays you find that it's been turned into this really nice cycle path. It's a cycle path, pedestrian path. It's a greenway, right? But just recently, they said that they were converting along the sides of it. I'm not fully understanding of what they're trying to do here, but they want to increase density immediately flanking either side of the greenway and have a very similar experience to what you see here that Nick's showing on screen. Except, of course, it isn't elevated per se. It's at grade. But the Arbutus example is interesting in its own sense. In its own sense, because it's a part of a bigger transit project that may or may not happen. We'll have to see. But they want to reintroduce streetcars to that corridor as well. So now have a really interesting sort of European style, like green track tramway next to really nice cycle and pedestrian path next to or in between dense housing, interesting parks. It's making it a place to be. And I'm a big fan of that idea. I think right now the Arbutus Greenway is a throughfare to somewhere else. I think it would be really cool to see it become an actual place in and of itself.
Yeah, it is really interesting how projects like that can kind of change the fabric, you know, and change people's perception of an area. One thing Calgary's been doing a lot of is these office conversions, because we used to have a great need for all of these office buildings downtown. But then, of course, with hybrid work as well as recession, slowly a lot of those emptied out. And so now we're converting a lot of those office buildings into housing. And they have to get a little bit creative about the shape of these apartments that are now in these what were offices. And one recently, I don't have the picture on hand, but they're taking, it's like a 7-story office building from maybe the 70s or 80s. And they're actually, not only are they converting the office space, they're actually adding an additional 13 stories of apartments onto it. So they're taking it as an opportunity to just build additional housing on top, which I think also kind of make sense from a financial perspective because it is expensive to do projects like that. And yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. Jen says I was listening to the middle podcast and they said Calgary punches above its weight when it comes to quantity of office buildings downtown for our population. Yeah, downtown Calgary is basically just a giant office park, and we're trying to change that because it doesn't foster community. But yeah, this is a really cool project that's happening in Tokyo. Thanks.
I can't wait to go check it out.
Yeah.
I'd like to mention, as Arden was talking about the Arbutus Greenway, because we have another story that kind of just slightly ties in here. And the Arbutus Greenway is actually being designated as a public street. So retail frontages can happen upon it. Yeah. So if you've never seen or been to the Arbutus Greenway, it's relatively secluded, and in a lot of places it's just like a big stretch of green, which is nice, or it's flanked by houses. But this new Broadway plan, which it does cross, and it's going to be really close to one of the stations, the Arbutus station, is right. There's lots of businesses there already, and they could definitely fill in some of the spaces with some businesses where people can stop, you know, have a coffee, grab a drink or a beer, or have some food with people. And this will become a place, a nice, quiet, pedestrian and cyclist street that you can sit beside, which is awesome.
That's so cool. Really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And I want to see more about of that. We talk a lot about pedestrianizing car streets, but I think there's also a good opportunity, a lot of opportunities for us to just like just create spaces like this from the beginning, you know, like
a brand new one.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that. Arden has a story for us though, that we'll hop on to. Do you want to take us away?
Sure. Gladly. So recently, the District of North Vancouver, published this interesting study on what's called the Burrard Inlet Rapid Transit Plan, I suppose. Basically it's a close look, or at least a taste, of the future of hopefully SkyTrain, where there's this really interesting corridor from West Vancouver through North Vancouver, across the Second Narrows into Vancouver proper, then over into Burnaby, and all the way down to Metrotown, that TransLink really wants to turn into rapid transit. And this new story, there, that's the word. This new story that was published by Daily Hive shows what this could hopefully look like. I don't know, do we have it on hand here? I can
put it up on the screen.
Because to get an idea of what the route looks like, the current plan right now is to turn this into an extension of an already existing rapid bus route. The rapid bus currently runs just on the North Shore segment of it, which we can see here from what is Park Royal to Phibbs Exchange across West Vancouver, North Vancouver. And the plan in the interim is to bring it south all the way to Metrotown through Burnaby Heights, Brentwood, connecting the Expo line to the Millennium line, and then connecting three, I believe, brand new municipalities to the SkyTrain network in the distant future. But hopefully, if this plan here goes forward, not so distant future, because this has a lot of potential for a really, really powerful SkyTrain line.
And you know what would be even more amazing? If they actually made these connections proper so that they're just not like interchanges where, you know, for example, when you cross the Millennium and Expo line where you have to get off, walk, you know, some, not that far, but a short distance to get on the different line. You could actually connect some of these lines up and end up making a loop in the future. Like imagine Park Royal came across the Lionsgate Bridge and right into downtown. Now you have a loop. You could have a loop.
There is.
Make it way easier to get to downtown Vancouver.
There is a different line. I'm going to refer to this as the purple line. That's what the BRT program wants to refer to it as, and what some other documents refer to it as. There's an adjacent gold line, which is the same idea, but once it gets into Vancouver, it goes along Hastings to Waterfront Station, which is pretty much exactly what you're talking to. It could be an extension of the Expo line. There's issues with that in terms of frequency and how much capacity you can add to an already really long expanding SkyTrain line. But for right now, this is a lot of potential. And honestly, it's just great to have an orbital SkyTrain line. Every SkyTrain line now pretty much feeds into downtown Vancouver. Millennium Line is a bit of an exception. When it goes along Broadway, though, it's might as well be downtown Vancouver. So it's great to see one that just barely even touches Vancouver, but instead is connecting lines to lines and communities across as well. Maybe a replacement to the C-Bus, depends on the speed, who knows? I'm really excited for this one.
Yeah, this is awesome. I mean, it's what a lot of people have been asking for a long time. I think anywhere, it's just like more rail, right? But we're such a city that's already poised for it. People are accepting of it. They know how to get on the SkyTrain. They've used it. People know how good it can be.
Yeah.
And I think we need more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic. Because, yeah, like what you're talking about, Arden, how like so many cities do that kind of hub and spoke model, right? Mm-hmm. Like they all feed into this location. You know, if you want to go from, you know, over here on Metro Town, and you're like, oh, well, I want to go to Lonsdale, I'm sure there's another route. But also, you know, like being able to take other options rather than just like into downtown and then out of downtown on those things. Forgive me if I got any of the, if what I said didn't make sense from Vancouver's perspective.
Don't worry.
Yeah, okay, good. Good. I've only spent like 8 hours in Vancouver ever. So
I can say the same about Calgary.
yeah. So, I think stuff like this is fantastic to be able to actually get other places, because for so long we've thought about our transit systems as being mitigations for rush hour traffic rather than actual ways that people go and see friends and family and go to events and, you know, go to university and do their grocery shopping and maybe specialty shopping, right? Like people use transit to get all over the place all the time. And if we're only building to rush hour traffic, we are not building so that people don't need cars. We're building so that people don't need cars between, you know, 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. Yeah. and 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., right? Like
it's like a lot of commuter rail we see yeah. in mm-hmm. North America. So my example is going to be Toronto with the GO train. The GO train has a lot of merits. You know, it does a lot of good, like you said, traffic mitigation during rush hour. But I was just having a conversation with my friend who lives just north of Toronto, and he said it's completely useless to me. It like barely runs on the weekend. I can't use it. Like it could be useful. It's not far from him. It could be something where he could use it. But yeah, it's just a, like you said, traffic mitigation effort, which again, that's not a bad thing, but it could be much better.
Even our West Coast Express.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Right. Same thing.
Can I hear your thoughts on Arden? I don't know if you know where exactly this transit project is at in its process. Is it just kind of like they're throwing this out as an idea, or is it kind of going to happen, but we don't know when, where is it at?
Right. So I can give a bit of insight on as much as what I know. So the short-term plan is for this to just be a rapid bus route, right? Running on regular roads, ideally with as much bus priority as possible, and just an extension of an already existing rapid bus line. Now, in the BRT rapid bus plan that TransLink has, there's little brackets next to this specific line saying with potential upgrade to like higher levels of rapid transit. This is what we're seeing here. So ideally in the next 3 years, this will be possible on a bus, on a good bus. This is possible on a bus. Right. This will be possible on a better bus soon. That's the short term. Going from there, it's the priorities, right? Where we have Broadway subway, which has just been delayed, unfortunately. We have Surrey Langley SkyTrain, which is trying to start construction, but hasn't. Then there's the later extension to UBC. It's like, okay, all of these are priorities right now. Where does Burrard Inlet Rapid Transit fit into there? And that's where I think a lot of potential with maybe like election promises could come in. Now that the public is more aware of this being a thing, I think it gives a good opportunity for political parties to say, hey, you vote me in, I'll build this faster, and I'll build it maybe before UBC SkyTrain, for example. It's possible.
I think that's a big spot where getting involved in your local politics and getting involved with your local advocacy organizations to kind of push for these different things and encourage these different things, and maybe have like a yes and approach to a lot of these projects, and you know, hopefully maybe take some funding away from the roads, because I'm sure we spend plenty on expanding roads still.
Yeah, and it's just a good point to highlight how TransLink of a system isn't just there to make more buses or make more trains. They're a more comprehensive transportation system where they are working on also making active transportation lanes. And if you didn't see the picture, there was a SkyTrain, kind of a cross-section SkyTrain bridge, and right beside it was an active transport lane where people could get across the bridge more comfortably, much like there's one that goes over to Richmond from South Vancouver, where there's a SkyTrain bridge, but there's also hanging below it a multi-use pathway over the bridge, which is fantastic, because I went over the ironworkers just last week and it was not great. It's not great. It works.
Checks out.
There's a divider, but it's not pleasant. There's like six lanes of high speed traffic you're riding beside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not great.
With that, let's get into some questions for Arden here. We kind of chatted a little bit about some of these questions already. But one thing that we were wondering, your channel name is The Greater Discussions. And we're wondering, where did that come from and what are the discussions?
It's not the most interesting of stories, if I'm being honest, but this is like my third YouTube channel that I've made. And whenever I make a name for a YouTube channel, I always I try to make it a little bit quippy in a sense. So discussions is pretty straightforward. I like it's to spur discussions about what I'm talking about. But greater is for Greater Vancouver. You know, it's within the context of Greater Vancouver whenever possible. So these are,
I like that,
discussions about Greater Vancouver, but really highlighting that discussions part. I love seeing discussions going on, say, in my comment section, or like my gondola video was put on Reddit on r/Vancouver, and just scrolling through the comment section on that and seeing people talking about this thing that I really cared about, that I made a video about.
Yeah.
And now seeing, you know, people in Discords, people in Reddits, just talking about the same thing, knowing that, hey, there might be, you know, the dinner table conversation might be about my video. That's pretty cool to me. And I think that it's a really important thing that helps me pick and choose what I make a video about. Like, is this worthy of having a secondary discussion about after the video comes up? I think so.
Yeah. And this is from Jen in our live chat right now. She said, What are one of your favorite comment section discussions from one of your videos?
Ooh.
Do you have any examples?
That is a good... I don't have many videos to begin with right now. I have a whopping four. I haven't even been doing this for a year. But
But they're like well done.
Very well,
like,
done.
If you're a listener of this channel, you've watched my videos, Alex or Ethan's, they're not bad. But like, we're talking like...
Arden,
he's got different
effort.
Camera angles. Yeah. He's talking in different places. He's all over the place. It's good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think the best example was in my gondola one. And it wasn't a standalone like comment thread per se, but more so just seeing public reaction to it. When I was editing the video, I had a bit of a nervous tingle inside of me. I was like, oh, do people give a damn about this? It's a gondola to a school. Who cares, right? Am I about to get bombarded by this opposition group that I completely highlighted in the video, right? Like, what's going to go on here? And I was extremely pleasantly surprised to see so many people in such passionate support for it as I was, right? Like, I had people talking about, you know, I mentioned in the video that the fear of heights might be a really tough thing to get around when it comes to replacing a bus with a gondola. What are you going to do? And it was the only issue that I couldn't have an answer for. My comment section was filled with people saying, I have a fear of heights and I think this should still happen. In fact, this needs to happen. And there were many people saying that. And it was really refreshing. And similarly, when said opposition group found the video and started saying stuff, people came to my side as well. I haven't had to actually address the opposition group personally because people believe the same things I do and are willing to share my opinion without having to cause some internet drama that really isn't necessary, you know? That's my favorite, you know, effect of what I've seen on my YouTube channel so far.
It is really, really cool to see when you start this conversation, how many other people are like, yeah, yeah, like here, let's talk about it. Let's talk about this. And I've talked about this with lots of other urbanist creators about just like the supportive nature of what we're doing within the community of urbanists across the world. And especially in Canada, you find a lot of it. But to be able to find people who also care about this stuff. And I think something that kind of makes this urbanist conversation different is that we're doing it because we care. We want to make things better. And I think that's a super great way to talk about it. Nick, you've got another question for Arden?
Yes. Well, since you're a student, actual person studying this stuff, you know, Alex and I, we're just enthusiasts. You know, we're nerds for it. We're, what would you call it? I won't say exhibitionist. That sounds a bit sexual or something. I don't know. But anyway,
that's the you're going to be professional, right?
On this, you're on the track to becoming an actual professional. My question was just for you. What advice would you have for somebody, you know, a young person who's interested in becoming an urban planner? Oof. How to get into that?
Man, that is a good question. I think guide yourself with your own interest. You know, find your own niche. I say that my planning niche is transportation. That's what I care the most about. I still like talking about housing and other aspects of planning, but transportation is where I really find my interest is peaked the most, right? And that just happened naturally as I grew up. Like I said, train guy to transit guy to history transit guy, and now I'm in planning school, right? Yeah. And I think if you follow your own interests like that, it ends up lining up. You wind up finding creators like I found About Here a few years ago, right? Didn't even connect the dots that it was a planning channel until like a year and a half ago. But like finding other creators, for example, that share similar interests, RM Transit, for example, is that transit niche again, right? Where you find the niches and associate them to yourself. And then, I don't know, that's really what's kind of guided me at this point so far.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's fantastic advice because everybody has different interests. Like we talk a lot on this channel about our own different interests between like me, Nick, and Ethan, and then as well as between all of the different guests that we have on the show. We've had planners and architects and people who are big into transit and people who are just kind of, they're just like, yeah, I don't know. It's just nice to walk places, yeah. Right? And it's great to get that variety of perspectives. And especially when you're having those discussions about your city, about your place. Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm excited to get into your thoughts on some of the questions we got from our listeners over kind of the past week here, which, by the way, if people want to write into us, you can do so at radiofreeurbanism@gmail.com. You can also leave a comment on the YouTube video. And if you are a patron subscriber, if you're on Patreon, you can actually just watch this show live and kind of join in on the conversation like Jen has throughout this. Arden is being watched currently by many people.
Oh boy.
So, that's the thumbnail now.
Yeah, that's the thumbnail. For people just listening, Arden was making some great faces. But we got an email from Walter, one of our longest term listeners. And he says, well, he starts off his email. I'm going to kind of summarize it here. It was a very long email. We read the whole thing when that is physically possible to do. But for this one, I summarized it for Walter. Walter just graduated, so we wanted to say congratulations from high school. Congratulations, Walter, on graduating from high school. In the email, he talked a little bit about his plans for after high school, and we're excited for that. But I want to skip to some of the questions here. And the first question Walter had for us, And we'll hear from the three of us here. Ethan will have to give his answer in spirit. He says, I understand that you three are not formal planners, but was there something about your educational journey that gave you more insight or interest in those planning related subjects? Let's start with Nick on this one.
Well, my post-secondary education was in paramedics. So I spent 3 years total. I got a diploma and a certificate along the way. And yeah, I think that shaped my brain in a certain way. And you can probably guess in which direction that was going, and seeing the death and destruction on our streets that happens so regularly and having to respond to that is something where you start to question is like, why is this happening so often? Why is this happening over and over? And does it have to happen over and over? And that's definitely a portion of where my interest of this came out of, but more so it came out of just experiencing really lovely, safe places around the world. That's where it really came from. But yeah, it definitely influenced the way I see the roads and respond to the stories and the news articles when things happen, when a car careens off the road and hits somebody. I've been there. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is an interesting perspective to come at it from. Arden, what about you? You're in the thick of it right now, and you're actually studying this stuff.
Yeah, I guess that's a bit of a weird case to answer this question, because I am in the planning program. But I mean, I think I could probably relate.
Is there something unique, that you've learned being in the planning program that you didn't know before or realize before?
I think it's more so just the lived experience of having to commute, more so than the actual, like, I'm still in the first year, which is very broad and stuff, so I can't quite relate it to the course material quite yet. But I do drive to school, unfortunately. It's to take transit would be 2 hours per direction.
Brutal.
So I drive 45 minutes to 50 minutes every day to get to school. And that has really cemented my position on what I try to fight for. And as the transportation niche that I have an interest in, I really wish it was possible to get to, in this case, SFU, a lot faster. And I've started to realize that there are really easy ways for that to be the case. That I really want to see. But also, I think it's worth mentioning that just because I drive, I think there's a bit of a dichotomy that people say that, like, oh, you drive, why are you talking about cycling? Why are you talking about transit or stuff like that, right? And I think that as someone who does all of that, I also bike. I have an e-bike, for example, and I bike around White Rock all the time. It isn't great, but I do it. And I take the SkyTrain whenever I enter Vancouver because I hate driving there. So, like, I think that just that lived experience is really what's kind of molded my desire to make these other systems better, you know? Allow for that commute time. Add a bus that actually goes there. There isn't one. So, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that insight. For me, for my own educational journey, for people who know me, that's been quite a thing. I studied social studies education, and so for me, I come at it largely from like that perspective, from my post-secondary experience perspective, largely from like kind of an anthropological view, along with some geography and stuff like that, like just that how we interact with different people, like that's a big part of that, and how that built environment kind of interacts with us and how that encourages us to behave in a certain way. All of my favorite courses were geography courses, so we talked a lot about that, but yeah, that's a really good question. Then this segment of the email, I want to read in full so that we kind of get the context for Walter's question here. Walter says, I wanted to talk about some initiatives from my local government that may help guide better urbanism, and I was curious about your thoughts. Just recently, my local county finished a master plan to guide recreation development. Around the same time, one of the two one of the two local cities in my area finally started workshops for a pedestrian cycle route, and the other city had its first workshop for adding benches and planters to a street that just had a road diet. I'm celebrating the small wins here, LOL. Anyways, it seems to me that a big part of the recreation initiative has been to construct and maintain multi-use trails throughout the area, which the plan identifies as an opportunity to enhance both recreation as well as connectivity slash utility. Do you think that this is a viable method of allocating resources towards better street design, or do you think recreation may get in the way of professional urbanist street design? How do you think small local governments can try to find the money for these projects and get their citizens on board with spending it on those projects?
That is a loaded question. Holy.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's big. I'll maybe start us off on this one. We had a bit of this conversation when Yute Lee was on the show. We had a conversation about how a lot of the time, the way that you get more people cycling to work is by getting more people cycling for fun. And so I think recreational paths are actually a really big and important step towards that. It also helps draw people out of their neighborhood. And I think it really can be a good start to showing people like, hey, you know, being outside, getting around with these active mobility options is actually kind of fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like you said that. And every morning when I go to work and it's rainy and just miserable outside, it's like 7 a.m. And the amount of people I see cycling is just like amazing. Every morning I'm like, look at this. People always say, oh, you can't cycle. And I'm like, look at it. Every morning it's raining here and I see people cycling to work. And I'm one of those people. Oh. And it's just like, it's great, right? But yeah, it's getting that first, is getting people interested in it to get them to do it more for utility. But so this isn't like replacing any kind of other right of way, right? That's not the conversation here. Okay.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I honestly think you have to come from the bottom up stuff, because a lot of this stuff can save a small town money in the long run. Mm-hmm. And you need to look at those and crunch the numbers and make that work. But also from the motivation of people's and like quiet enjoyment, saying, hey, this is going to make your streets quieter. There's going to be less cars driving down your street type of thing, right? I think that's another way.
Yeah.
People want that. So,
yeah. Final thought on it, Arden?
It immediately got me thinking about when I recently read White Rock's cycling and active transportation plan, because we have a cycle network. We don't. We have a cycle network, but it is entirely sharrows and like a couple of painted bicycle lanes on the side, right? And they want to change that. But the issue that is currently here is like the plan exists. Now what, right? So I'm seeing now another small community creating a master plan. The key here now is to actually do something with it. Council knows that this stuff exists, right? They know that it is there. You have to actually advocate for it to happen, though. When streets are getting rebuilt, when streets are getting redesigned, you have to like check back to the plan, see, has this been accounted for? Is what they're planning to do now good, you know? And go out and talk at council, or just online, emailing your counselors, I don't know if MLAs are a thing in the States. It sounds like this is the States. But I think that's the big thing, you know, is actually be the change you want to see, right? So yeah. I think that's what I would really hone in on here, is they have the plan, do something with it.
Yeah. 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 I think that's super important. Last note on Walter's email is check out Unlikely Gems. He mentioned that in the email as a fun Instagram page for people to check out. I looked at it and it's entertaining. Nick, you've got the next comment.
This is just a comment from Jasperly on YouTube, and they said, anybody ever tell Alex that he looks like Tim Chin Walks?
No one has ever told me that.
Nobody. But you know what? He has a point. And so you should have them on.
Do you see?
You'd be speaking to your doppelganger.
Is there a resemblance? I just shaved a little bit today, but
yeah, if you were a bit scruffier, wow. But yeah, yeah. He's got the glasses too. Yeah. Put on a backwards hat and yeah,
maybe
be good
maybe.
To go.
It's uncanny.
Yeah, I literally went to Tim's page recently to see what he's been having on because I haven't seen much of his content. He hasn't posted in many months. I wonder why.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'd love to have Tim on in the future for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, we'll have to get him. I have been told that I sound like Niall Redd though. That's been a comment on a few of
Who's
my videos.
That?
He's a chemistry YouTuber. Makes some really, really cool stuff. Even one of my friends told me that I sounded like Niall Redd.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe maybe we'll have to get him on the show too, and then nobody will be able to tell. Nobody. Nobody. But I tell people it's just the Canadian accent because he's also Canadian. Yeah, but let's go to this last question from Jen Hall. Arden, if you want to read that out for
sure.
us, if you've got it here,
yeah.
Or it's in the show notes, but I'll send it again.
I've got it pulled up. Don't even worry.
Oh, you got it pulled
don't
up?
Even
Perfect.
Worry. I've got this
Beautiful.
Covered here. So the comment here from Jen Hall says, if you could tell your city to install bollards anywhere, where would be the first place you would tell them to install them? And
I'm gonna have to think for a second. Do you have one, Arden? Do you have one locked and loaded?
I'm thinking because Jen Hall's in chat right now, right?
She is.
Okay, because are we thinking like the retractable bollards? Or are we talking like stopping a car from crashing into a storefront bollards?
I think it's your imagination.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's
cool.
Whatever you
All
want.
Right. I like
yeah.
that. I like that. Come back to me then. give me
okay.
a sec.
Well, mine would be to at least in some streets to have retractable bollards to be used as modal filters so that emergency vehicles could easily get through. But there's no fucking way anybody with just their car is going to get through.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not totally sure if I have like a particular location where I'd want to put them. Although the idea of using my imagination kind of got me thinking, what if I just put a giant one in the middle of a park?
That's a roundabout.
And just called it art, you know? Yeah. Just
like
a giant
art installation?
Ball. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like
yeah. Actually, you know, maybe somewhere that I think that we should have a roundabout, I'll just stick a giant bollard in the middle of the intersection. Make a statement.
Cool.
Yeah. And yeah, I like that. Arden, do you have
in
one?
In that case, I like where Nick's going with the kind of like the ability to have like a modal filter. Because I think a lot of our school routes in White Rock could really use some modal filtering. White Rock already has some pretty wide roads that are quite comfortable to drive, like I see people going like 70 or 80 on a residential street. I live on one of them. So I see it all the time. And I think that even just the streets adjacent to that, if you could put like a couple of bollards, narrow it a little bit, and maybe have a retractable one that'll, say, close it off during school hours or when children are typically, ideally, walking or biking to school. I walked to school when I was in school here. So I think that would be really, really nice to see.
Yeah, I do like the idea of using it as a modal filter. I'm not necessarily partial to the retractable ones. I've seen them work in like the Netherlands and stuff, but I don't know. I'm not sure if I've got a particular spot. Jen does suggest retractable bollards in Sunnyside in Calgary for some some car-free days. I think that could work. Or even if you like made them removable, you know, like you could easily just like plop the bollards up for certain times of the week or something. I don't know. But I think there's some interesting opportunities.
I just had an epiphany right then and there. And that was that like White Rocks Main Street, which continues into Surrey, but the White Rock side is already 30 kilometers an hour. I think it's got high rises going up on either side of them with storefronts on them. The white sidewalks are already pretty nice. But I think if you were to put that whole thing, you know, some bollards to stop cars from turning onto it, that would be a really nice car-free summer experience. You can kind of say the same about our waterfront, but that's got a whole other set of issues that we do not have the time to go into today. But who knows? Maybe another time.
I can't wait for your video on it. Speaking of which, as we wrap up here, tell us, where can we find you, Arden?
Well, you can find me on YouTube at The Greater Discussions, on Instagram at The Greater Discussions, and on Twitter at The Arden English, which should probably just be called
Fantastic.
The Greater
Discussions. Yeah. Well, we'll have links to all of that in the show notes. Nick, where can we find you?
You can find me at Nick Laporte or Nick the Door. And Alex, where can people find you?
I'm like, please ask. I'm working on things, I promise. Yeah, you can find me at Humane Cities on YouTube and Instagram. I've got some fun stuff coming up, so I'm excited to share that. And maybe one of those fun stuffs will even be my Montreal trip. I got some great footage of the trains. So that's like, nice. I'm excited to share that. And with that, we'll wrap it up. Arden, if you want to kick us off here.
I got something.
Oh, you got something first.
Yeah. I got a thing. Yeah, just to end the show here, I want a quote from the late Jack Layton, who was a politician in Canada and could have been a very good one.
Yeah.
But he had cancer and died. But in a discussion about Olivia Chow, it's ex-wife, she is now the mayor of Toronto, maybe even a bicycle mayor. She bikes to the city hall, which is pretty cool. But there was a quote that was brought up, and I think it's very apt and important to think about when we're talking about these things and trying to make our cities better. So I'm going to read this here. He says, "My friends, love is better than anger. Hope is better than fear. Optimism is better than despair. So let us be loving, hopeful, and optimistic, and we'll change the world." And with that, Arden, take us away.
Car bad, train good.
Two wheels good.
And feet first. We'll see you next time on Radio Free Urbanism.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. For access to early episodes, live shows, and other perks, join us on Patreon at Radio Free Urbanism.